Channel. Stevie Cameron is an investigative journalist and the author of, among other things, On the Take, about corruption in Brian Mulroney's conservative government. She is in Jerusalem this morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Akash Maharaj is a former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada, and he is in our Toronto studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Maureen Mancuso is a political science professor and provost at the University of Guelph. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, before we talk about corruption in federal politics, I want to ask each of you what you thought about what Grant Devine just had to say. Stevie Cameron.
I was quite surprised by what he had to say. He's focusing on the convictions of his MLAs and his cabinet ministers, including the man who was the deputy premier for Mr. Devine, Eric Burnson, who also went to prison and was a conservative senator named by Brian Mulroney. But I think that the citizens of Saskatchewan were far more outraged and alarmed over the things that had happened in their government long before this scandal erupted that you were talking about. When he inherited the government there, he had a small surplus. And by the time they were pushed out of power, I think he and his cabinet and government had developed a budgetary deficit of about $15 billion.
So what do you think of the way he characterized it?
I think he focused on the small stuff. I mean, those people did go to jail, and that was the culmination of years and years and years of corrupt government. And I know Mr. Devine has said in the past that the contract that really finished his government was the Gigatext contract. It was a contract that involved a friend of Mr. Mulroney's, a man called Michelle Cogger, and that contract was such a scandal in the province that it turned the voters against him. A lot of the stuff that we saw, the convictions and so on later on, happened after he left office. He left office because of Gigatext and a history of corruption in his government, and not...
Okay, Akash Maharaj, what do you think of what you just heard?
I thought that his reaction was breathtaking in its absurdity. It shows that I think he's not merely unrepentant, but that he's learned nothing. And it's the sort of reaction, the sort of defense of the indefensible, that feeds into a tyranny of low expectation amongst the public. It's not merely a question. To begin with, when you have ministers of the crown being fingerprinted and going to jail, you cannot slough this off as being inconsequential. Moreover, it's not merely a question of how much money was involved. It's a question of the fact that private individuals enrich themselves at the expense of the public good, and in doing so caused irreparable harm to public confidence and public institutions. The amount of money is less important than the fact that corruption was allowed to run rampant. And for all anyone involved in politics, for any party, you must stand prepared to be a patriot before you are a partisan, and to try to learn from your mistakes if we are to redeem not only individual parties but the political system itself. I'm alarmed that Mr. Devine not only thinks that this was inoffensive and acceptable, but that he was prepared to run for federal politics on that basis.
Maureen Mancuso, what do you think?
I thought it was a typical political response of a former politician who still doesn't get it. Obviously, I think that the appropriate response would have been to take some measure of responsibility, apologize, say that it was a sad mark on his government, and move on. I was really quite shocked by the benign attributes he's ascribed to the incident. I mean, it hardly could have happened out of accident. It really would have required them working together, as I understood it. They were fictitious expense claims from imaginary companies against a pooled account, and then they handed out the money to each other for various, all sorts of personal goodies, ranging from computers, yes, but also including riding saddles, Hawaiian holidays. I just don't get the benign characteristics that he's ascribing to the whole scandal.
Okay, well, we're going to have to break for a newscast, but all three of you, I'd like you to sit tight, because clearly there's lots to discuss here about then and about now, and what perhaps can be done about it all. So Stevie Cameron, Akash Maharaj, and Maureen Mancuso will return with me right after the news. You're listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. But first, how to resist and repel corruption in Canada. We started talking about this just before the newscast, and I am joined again by Stevie Cameron. She's an investigative journalist and the author of, among other books, On the Take, about corruption in Brian Mulroney's conservative government. She is in Jerusalem this morning. Akash Maharaj is a former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada, and he is in our Toronto studio. And Maureen Mancuso is a political science professor and provost at the University of Guelph. And welcome back, all of you. Stevie, I want to start with you. The sponsorship scandal and the arrests of Grant Devine's cabinet ministers were not the only corruption scandals in Canadian politics. Give us a brief history. When did political corruption really start showing itself in Canada?
Oh, probably with Sir John A. Macdonald and many, and ever since. I mean, it's never stopped. I mean, if we go back to sort of a time when some of us can remember, Louis Saint Laurent was a Liberal Prime Minister in the 50s, and there was a Toronto ad agency that had all the contracts for English Canada, and they paid the salary of the Liberal Party's national director. Trudeau had three ad agencies in Toronto. I'm just talking about ad agencies at the moment, but they formed a company called Red Leaf that did all the election work. They got all the, basically those companies got all the English advertising, and there was one company in Quebec that got it. Then it turns, you know, when Mulroney comes into power, the ad contracts go to conservative ad agencies, and there were hundreds of millions of dollars that went to these firms. And what's really interesting is that Chuck Gitte, who's been a major figure in this sponsorship scandal, was one of the key people steering advertising in the Mulroney years to these Tory advertising agencies. And so it just went on and on. One of Mr. Mulroney's closest advisors was doling out ad contracts in a hotel in Montreal for years. And again, you're looking at the same Crown corporations involved in these contracts, Via Rail, Canada Post, Business Development Bank. I mean, nothing changes. It's just, you know, it's their turn, it's our turn. That's the way it works.
Well, how did the issues of corruption in the Mulroney years compare to what's been alleged in the sponsorship scandal?
I think that... I think it's very similar. I think it went on. It was much more pervasive throughout the party. I think that there were far more RCMP investigations. I think at one point there were 65 RCMP investigations. Far more Mulroney cabinet ministers and fundraisers and so on were charged or convicted or forced to resign. The scandal started within a few weeks of his coming into office, and continued right through the way, so that when, if you remember the 1993 election, which many people do not, you'll remember there were only two Conservatives elected.
Hmm. Maureen Mancuso, you have been a consultant to the House of Commons calling for ethics regulations to be put in place. Have the politicians been listening to you?
No, and not to the public either. I think that there are lots of examples. If we just look to Britain, Westminster model from where we have evolved, they have since '97 appointed their standing committee on standards in public life, and that was a direct result on the heels of a huge nationwide review of standards for all office holders. So it would take into account everyone, ministers, civil servants, advisors, members of parliament, members and office holders of all non-departmental public bodies. It reached into the health sector. And it was an ongoing open dialogue about the ethical issues facing that country, that society, that public sector. And out of that came a whole list of regulations, a code, and more important in my mind, a series of seven aspirations ethical principles that they put out there for the public to see and expect, therefore, their office holders to live up to.
But we're told Canada is more transparent than most countries in the world. How much of a problem, then, do we have compared to some of these other countries?
Well, I think it's fair to say that if you asked on an international scene, is Canada seen as a hotbed of corruption, the answer would be no. But I think that it also is misleading to say that nothing ever happens. And in terms of the work that I've done and the conversations with politicians that I've had, I think there is a real... they really sort of underestimate the ability that they do have to influence and what that influence gets them and why people would want access to that influence. And I think that they're very focused on that they have no power. I'm just a lowly backbencher in an executive-dominated system. What kind of mischief could I get into?
How does the federal government compare to the provinces when it comes to fighting corruption?
I think they really lag behind the provinces. I think Ottawa has not really been showing the lead in terms of putting in place ethics regulations or codes, or even in terms of the ethics commissioner. It's taken until this government to really change what had been a fundamental flaw in the office of the Ethics Commissioner, having him previously report to the Prime Minister directly, and it's only just recently, I think since March of 2004, that they report now directly to Parliament, which is a move in the right direction. But the provinces have always had those kinds of office holders.
Akash Maharaj, you have been a loyal Liberal. How serious do you think the allegations coming out of the sponsorship scandal are?
Oh, they're very serious. This has been a scandal of epic proportions, not just for the public at large, but also for the party itself. It's, and I would say that it's not simply a question of how much money. It's a great deal of money, but it's also the fact that it has fed into low public expectations. We're living through an era where the public, unfortunately, already believes in large that all politicians are corrupt, and this is just the way in which things work. I don't believe that's true, but this scandal does, unfortunately, confirm the worst suspicions of Canadians. For the party internally, there's no denying the fact that the Liberal Party's long association with power has meant that we have become a magnet for people who are more Liberals of convenience rather than Liberals of convictions. And I think that if our party is to survive this trial by fire, not only do we have to re-earn the trust of Canadians, we need to be able to reform ourselves internally so that the vast majority of Liberals who have joined the party out of a common belief in a shared set of Liberal democratic ideals are the ones who have the lead in this party, rather than a small number of people who have come into it for private gain.
So, you know, there are those who lay the blame inside the Liberal Party on a few bad apples. What you're really saying is that the party itself needs to take some responsibility here.
Absolutely. I think it is the case that the number of people who are actively involved in this scandal and who actively profited from it is vanishingly small. Having said that, for each person who was actively involved in handing over envelopes of cash, for example, there were many, many more people who were intentionally blind or stood silent while this happened. Insofar as the party collectively needs to take responsibility, it is because this happened on our watch and because there is, regrettably, a culture, almost a conspiracy of silence that pervades all political parties, a fundamentally illiberal impulse to equate dissent with disloyalty. Moreover, I would say one of the things Mr. Devine repeated over and over again was, well, I didn't know, therefore I'm not responsible. That is not acceptable in a democracy. When political parties and political leaders can defend themselves by pleading ignorance and impotence, we are left in a position where the public has no one to hold to account.
What are you saying about your own leader, then, of the Liberal Party?
I think he can definitely be credited for having brought in the Gomery Commission and having brought in the Ethics Commissioner. But I think that Paul Martin will have to do more. Will have to show to Canadians that our party is willing to do more than simply ensure that criminal charges are pressed against those who deserve them, but that he's willing to clean house in the Liberal Party itself.
Stevie, you know, you have written about favoritism and kickbacks under the Conservatives. You just ran through a whole bunch of ad agency stories for us just now. Why do you think this sort of thing takes place?
I think a lot of people go into politics and glom onto politicians because of the money. It's the money. It's and I completely disagree with a lot of people who think that there's a difference between the criminal activity of politicians and the criminal activity of blue-collar criminals, violent criminals. It's the criminal mind. They're there for the money. And they want the contracts. It's not just advertising. They want the legal business. They want the contracts from the military. They want public relations contracts, whatever. And they want jobs. They want to go to the Senate. They want whatever. And I think the system is extremely corrupt. I think that Akash is absolutely right when he says there's a conspiracy of silence, and it envelops Ottawa. And people are afraid to complain, not even just not whistleblowing, they're just simply afraid, because they're afraid they'll lose their job if they step in anyone's way and try to stop it.
Stevie, can you see practical ways of changing that, of stamping out corruption?
How long do we have here? I've made a list. I think, well, one of the top of my list is to treat white-collar criminals like blue-collar criminals. Throw them into prison. You know, I've seen some of the worst offenders in the Mulroney government go to jail for a weekend. And, you know, basically they're allowed to go home or they're given a slap on the wrist. I think that there's a problem. There has to be a real division between police and politicians. When you think that the commissioner of the RCMP reports to the Solicitor General, and that the people in the Prime Minister's office are routinely briefed on sensitive investigations, I think that's a very problematic issue. I think you have to support whistleblowers in Ottawa instead of firing them and instead of destroying them. I think you have to have financial penalties. I think you have to make access to information effective instead of preventing people. I think it took me something like 8 or 9 years to get any information on one of the Airbus deals I investigated when I was writing a book. And there, you know, this kind of stuff is bad for business. When the best companies are not getting the business because they aren't willing to pay bribes or they're not willing to do the dirty work to get them, then the taxpayer is being cheated. The money's being squandered. And this is, anyway, end of rant.
Well, I hear you. Maureen Mancuso, what do you think needs to change?
Well, I would agree with all of the things that Stevie has said. The only other ones I would maybe suggest are, I think there was plans to reintroduce the Office of the Comptroller General, which would really be, I think, a good thing to help with government departments to vet spending, and also would enhance the whole auditing requirements and the regulations, especially for public corporations. And I think that's at the heart of this scandal in terms of the enforcement of existing regulations. I also think that there was a sense that the way in which these appointments to these public boards are made should be reviewed. I do think that there is a strong sense that the public has that these have become very cronyism appointments and that there should be a more open and transparent process by which they acquire these jobs.
Now, you've told the House of Commons this kind of thing, haven't you?
Yeah, we've talked to both the House and the Senate in terms of a code of conduct. I think this is a good thing for all office holders. I think it helps to raise the profile of the issues, but at the same time helps the public understand in terms of providing a benchmark of what the expectations are, because
okay.
I sometimes do think the public has expectations that are way out of line.
So if you've told them this, are they doing something?
Well, we did see movement on the Ethics Commissioner, and there has been proposed legislation, certainly around conflict of interest, and it just has managed to die on the order paper.
So it's not enough?
I think it's not. The political will hasn't been there to do that, and maybe this scandal will provide the political will to do it.
Okay. Well, thank you, all three of you, for talking about this today. I will all be watching still as this continues to unfold.
Thanks
thank
a lot,
you, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Stevie Cameron. She's an investigative journalist. She is the author of On the Take, and she spoke to us from Jerusalem. Akash Maharaj is a former national policy chair of the Federal Liberal Party. He was in Toronto. And Maureen Mancuso is a political scientist and provost at the University of Guelph.